You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store.
I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation cure master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com or VirginiaTraditions.com.
Hi, everybody. You tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. The show is Flash Talks Cash. We're about money, making it, spending it, saving it, what to do with it. I'm your host, Joanne Flash Fleming, and my co-host is here bright and early, Andrew, my son, Newman.
Indeed.
And we have a special engineer producer today. We got Carlos. Hello, Carlos. All right. Hi, Carlos. He'll get used to us. By the time he goes, he'll get used to us. Our show is broadcast live every Thursday from 4:30 to 5. And if you can't listen live while we're streaming, you can tune in on the website. All the episodes are archived. And there's always a free podcast available for downloading. You can listen to us while you're flying around the world in the airplane. Anytime you want to listen to us.
I'm going to download all our shows and listen to it as I go to Italy next week.
Yeah. Oh, Andrew's on vacation next week.
No.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Oh, good.
What are you going to do without me?
I'm going to be on vacation that week, too.
Oh.
Oh.
Wow. Well, how nice. It must be nice to be able to just go on vacation whenever you want.
Yes. Well, you know, I paid my dues. Okay, today's show is a great show. It's called Creative. Anybody out there creative? You need money? Anybody out there need money? We have a special guest today. We got Jim Leonard, artist who works in many different mediums. Say hi, Jim.
Hi, how you doing, everybody?
Oh, good. We're going to talk about how to raise money as an artist, and the reason why we have Jim here today is because it was Jim's idea that we should do a show about this.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, so be careful.
Thank you, Jim.
Be careful when you offer some
advice or guidance or
questions. Or
I actually just had questions.
He had questions.
And he got dragged on the air.
And he got
dragged.
No, drag, oh, wow. Jim. Wrong word. When you're curious, it gets you into trouble. No, so wow. We're going to talk today about organizations such as Kickstarter. I've heard about it. I've talked about it very briefly on the air the past year, Jim has forced me to really do my accounting research regarding it because he asked very good tax questions, money questions about it. But let's just go over it and give an overview of what it is because some creative people might not even know it exists, although I think it's pretty popular in the creative community. Would you say that, Jim? It's pretty well known?
Yeah, there's a more and more. I'm actually fairly late to the program in terms of finding out about this. I only found out about it in the last year, but it seems like the past year and a half or so, a lot of people have been getting emails saying, hey, support my project.
Yes. Well, it's only been around since 2009, so it's not around that long, and you know, this kind of thing spreads. I don't think you're that late. I think it's just getting the momentum. There were people who were ahead, and now it's really beginning.
What exactly is it?
Well, okay, Kickstarter. So, and jump in there and help me, Jim, as we go along. It's a social network where you have an idea to do something creative. You put it out on the web, and you ask people for donations.
Are you donating to Kickstarter, or are you donating to the individual?
No, you donate to the individual. Kickstarter.
You donate via PayPal to somebody's project.
Kickstarter is the website.
It's sort of like Facebook. It's sort of like Facebook, but it's a whole bunch of different projects. There's artist books. There's collectible card games. There's people doing public sculptures, dance performances mm-hmm. that need some money.
Music, film, anything creative.
So my question is, if you're donating money to like Jim here, does he have to report that as income then?
Well, that was Jim's question. Was that one of your questions? Something about that.
That was one of my questions.
Well, you know, I did my work. So the answer to that is, yes, he would have to, unless you're donating to a non-for-profit organization.
But they still have to report this income. Whatever people giving on this website, you have to. Someone has to report it, right?
Well, but not pay tax on it. Like Jim has to report his regular income. He's not a non-for-profit organization.
My other question is,
but there are other places, and we're going to go over that, that actually have organizations where you can donate to these other organizations, and they act as a conduit to these local
it's
artists.
Like a grant, then
something like that. But the great thing about that is the person who gives the money can deduct it as a donation.
My hands up.
As opposed to a nonprofit, a not non for profit. It's just an ordinary, just a gift. Yes.
So the person say donates to Jim. Do they get a tax write off, or is it just
what,
like an investment?
Did you just hear what I said? What did I just tell him? What I just said?
No.
Good answer.
Is it an investment in him? Then is it?
Well, to give an example of how you would use Kickstarter in your latest project, Jim.
Okay. Right now, I'm working on a book monograph with somebody, and we are shopping it around. And
Slow down.
Okay.
We're financial people, so what's a book monograph?
An artist book, a coffee table book.
Ah,
okay. I've got a series of paintings that makes a lot of sense in a book of about 120 pages. A
beautiful.
Sweet little thing you could have on your coffee table. And anyways... How do you come up with the funds for that? And you put a lot of work into it, right? And we're shopping it around. It's sometimes hard to find the right publisher. Do you want that work to just sit on the shelf and go nowhere?
Right.
So we're saying, well, Kickstarter might be another way to actually make this print project happen.
Right.
And one of the things that I've seen when I've looked at some of the other artist books that people are doing on Kickstarter and some of the like Indiegogo and some of the other sites, they one of the lowest level tier rewards. They actually have tiered rewards. So if, sort of like when you call into NPR and they say you get this tote bag, you get this mug, you get Atlantic Monthly, they'll actually say we'll give you a signed copy of the book for either just below what they're going to retail it at or just above. But, you know, and I also had some questions about, is that sales tax?
Yes.
Do you have to come up with that?
The answer is yes. You are, this, the gist of this thing is for the vast majority of people, they're just business people. You're an artist is a business person who is out there generating income. So the income you receive from the donations are 100% taxable to you. The things that you sell are subject to sales tax. If in the normal course of business, it's subject to sales
tax. If he's selling them directly to an individual.
Yes. Okay. Oh, yes. And, you know, when you sell these books, if you sell these books retail, you have to collect sales tax. Of course, if you sell them to Barnes & Noble, that's another whole question. Yeah. But the average artist is selling onesies, twosies, and all of that is subject to sales tax. So those are the general tax questions.
How would they find out about that?
Well, we don't want to promote illegal tax.
We're not talking about a lot of money here.
But we don't want to promote any legal. He asked me a legal question, question, and I answered.
I understand.
But let's talk about
Like you put your head in your sand on that one.
Wait, now let's go back to Jim's project. Let's go back to Jim's project. But you got to get people to donate money to you.
I'm on the sale end, I'm saying.
Oh. So, Jim, so give us an idea of like a budget that you would really be looking for from Kickstarter.
Well, I've also been keeping an eye on what projects are out there and what have been successful. And I see people raising between $3,000 all the way up to $15,000, $20,000 for some of these things, independent films and whatnot. And for something like a small monograph, once you cover fees and stuff to a designer, you're talking about $9,000 sometimes to $15,000 to get, say, a run of 500 or 750 books made, and that's like with a hardcover.
So you go about this, you put your project on the web. Andrew's got more questions.
I'm still very confused by this. Like, so people just giving you money?
Yes, they like your project.
They just like what you're doing and
one of the ways that they find out about your project, all these things have a video. They all have a YouTube style video where somebody works as a talking head, and the ones that are the most successful, that video seems to be key.
Yes. It's a selling point. It's a pitch.
It's a marketing pitch. Mm-hmm. No matter where you're coming from, you're still marketing something in this case. Mm-hmm. And you need to be able to very concisely let people know what you're doing, show them that you already have a significant amount of progress on it, show examples of what you're doing, and then hopefully also have some enticing rewards in terms of, like, there's usually about 5 to 6 tiers of the amount of stuff. Like, there's a portrait photographer doing a book who, if you gave him $3,000 towards the book, he'd actually give you a private portrait
right,
session.
Right.
Okay.
So it works like this. So Kickstarter, you put your video up there. They have a web page on their page, and you kind of tell everybody.
Facebook.
You kind of tell everybody you know, friends, family, anybody you could think of, to go and look at my site and let's get some money. And then they have to tell their friends and so on and so on. And then I guess there are people who just look at Kickstarter. They don't know what else to do with their money, and they say, "Oh, let me look. Let's see what's interesting out there." And they send money to people. So, but the deal works like this. If you don't, you have to put a budget out there. So let's say Jim puts a budget of $10,000, said I need to raise $10,000. So if he doesn't raise the $10,000, the project get all the money that he did raise. If he falls short and he only raised like $6,000, all the money gets turned back to the donors.
Really?
Yes.
Does PayPal handle that automatically? Or does the...
I don't know how it actually works.
Does the money sit like an escrow account or something? Or how does it
work? I guess it's not released to you until you reach the...
Your goal?
Your goal. There also are fees. The PayPal takes their 3 to 5% for all the transactions, and Kickstarter gets, I think, 5%, 4 or 5% of the total project. So in total, it'll cost you around 10% of the total if you reach your goal. 10% will be...
So you have to over
budget. Will be paid. Well, that's probably in your budget.
You have to build it into your budget.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's to keep, you know, real people from not just scamming the system, you know. So now, that according to what I'm finding out, about 45% of the projects in Kickstarter actually reach their goal.
That's good.
Some of them, many of them, actually exceed their goal.
So you want to make money on your project.
No, he just wants to fund his project.
I just want to see it happen. Okay. I mean, that most of the artists that I know who've used it, have, like a friend of mine, Taylor Kuffner, just went and took his Gamelotron to Burning Man, and they needed $6,000. He's this guy who made this big robot that actually plays gamelan music from Indonesia, and he's actually been cataloging this dying art form, and he was able to raise, I think, $6,000+ to get this installed there at something like the Temple of the Sun or I forget exactly what the site was called. But
that's amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't understand this.
You don't understand? Well, it's this a collective.
No, I understand what's going on here. Yeah. I just don't understand.
Well, it's a great community movement. And, you know, I've read something very interesting. Now, I read an interview about one of the guys. There's two guys who created Kickstarter. And there's also a couple of other organizations that have copied, or they were there before. I'm not sure. But it was a very interesting take. He said, you know, why is this going on? And the guy said, the owner said this. He said, you know, let's use film and music. For many, many, many years, film and music has been dictated by corporations. You're totally disconnected. The listener or the end user is totally disconnected from the artist. The corporate executives decide what gets made. They have to fit this template. An album has got to be 12 songs, 50 minutes long, or a movie. A film's got to be 90 to 120 minutes. They book them in. They distribute. They find your distributor. They put you in the movie theaters. They put you. They sell your album. You go on tour. Nowhere does the actual end user connect with the artist until the final product. You pay your fee to buy the album, or you pay your fee to go to the movies. This connects you to the artist from the beginning of the project all the way through the project. It's very supportive. It's really a very cool way.
Do you send out updates?
You could.
On the progress of the project?
I think so.
There's sort of like a message board that sort of looks like a Facebook comment board or something like that, where people go like back and forth. And you can also look and see, and donors can choose to be anonymous, and they can also leave like a comment on this message board. Uh-huh. And then also there's, just like any sort of, say, nonprofit fundraising, they totally have that thermometer type thing where it's like filling up, and you see how close it is to actually hitting the goal, and you also see the countdown. They're usually, I think, I don't know if it's a standard time, but like a lot of them seem to be like 90 days or 60 days.
Right.
So you have a certain window.
Yes. Yeah, it's not this endless thing. So it does sort of, like any sort of fundraiser, basically, it puts a little bit of pressure and onus on your audience to step up and help you out.
And it's very,
or on you to get your name out there even more. That's crazy.
And it's very common as you get close to the end and you're just a few dollars short, where people who originally donated some money will then bump it up and send in additional money. Now, the average donation is probably about $25. You know, many, many people don't send much more than that. But if you get 100 people to send you $25, how much money do we have?
I don't know. Where's that calculator?
That calculator. $25 times 100 sounds like $2,500.
That is exactly $2,500.
Okay. So then in this case, in Jim's case, he's a quarter of a way there. So, you know,
is that what you have?
No, I just use that as an example.
If I had the $10,000 budget. But one other thing that I didn't mention when I said the video is key, another thing that seems to be key is people having a very clear, realistic budget to people in the industries, so they can get what they're actually looking at and go, oh yeah, that's how much it would cost to get your permitting, say, to make that film and your video cameras and all that. But on top of that, whenever people mention in their budget that they are putting in X amount of seed money, like that friend of mine who did the thing at Burning Man, they were very upfront and said, we've put in $3,000 seed money of our own money that we've gone out raised already through either working second jobs, et cetera, whatever we do as artists anyways to do the DIY funding.
Now, I wonder how much control they have over the budgeting, because I know, you know, I do budgets, and Andrew works with people who do budgets, and lots of people have no idea how to really do a real budget. And so these artists say, okay, I need, you know, $10,000, and then they realize, you know, halfway into the project, my God, this project's going to cost $27,000. I wonder what happens in a situation like that. Do you have any information about that, Jim? Do you know anybody about that?
I have no information on that, to be honest. And I got to say that I'm far enough along. Like, you know, I've been at this, not to age myself too much, but close to 2 decades now as a professional artist. And you basically know that it's sink or swim. And if you don't plan properly, you know, you learn that in your first few years. Mm-hmm. So whenever you try anything big like this, and that's the other thing too that I've also realized, that it seems like you can only pull the trigger on doing a Kickstarter maybe once or twice in your career.
Oh, there's a limit, huh?
Like, well, no, in terms of how much can your audience take it? If you came back to them every year saying, I'm doing another big project. I mean, maybe people really loved what you did, mm-hmm. and you keep growing your audience, mm-hmm. you could, but... Mm-hmm. For some of us, for most of us, you know, we need to basically be able to gauge, is our audience ready to fund something like this? Have we grown our audience that much?
Also, you don't want to keep going back to Kickstarter and getting your funding.
Can you cheat the system?
True.
No, I'm asking a question.
Let's take a break. Let's take a break. Right. Let's come back in a minute and read some emails and finish talking about this topic. Okay, we'll be back in 1 minute.
Must come together as one. There are people dying. Oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all. We can't go on pretending day by day that someone somewhere will soon make a change. We all are part of God's great big family. And the truth, you know, love is all we need.
Okay, we're back. We left off with Andrew wants to know how to cheat.
It's not really cheating. Okay. It's just I had a question where, what if your overall budget's actually 25, but on Kickstarter you say I only need 10 for like a portion of your budget? Like you want to build a house and you need $25,000 for the whole house, but you need $10,000 to get the basement started. Like, can you go onto Kickstarter and say I need $10,000 even though it's not for the full project?
Well, go ahead, Jim. What do you think?
Well, I think it depends, really. You know, if you need to be honest and upstanding, which I think many artists, a lot of us are fairly generous, even though we're also got a little bit of a knave in us. But you could break your project up into multi-phases, I guess, at that point, okay. And say, I need to get the foundation laid for this multi-phase project and just be upfront about it. But sure, I guess there's nothing that's total cheat-proof.
My real worry is, though, the timeline is like my real concern. Like, you're only given 60 or 90 days. And say your project's a really big, broad project that you really want to get started, and like you don't have enough time.
There are some people that have gotten $200,000 and $300,000, by the way.
Okay.
So you're really going to...
Based on the things you told me, like people only give like $25 at a time.
No, but that's the average. But there are people that have gotten $200,000 and $300,000.
I would be worried. Like, you really want to do something, and you really want to get it out there, and like getting like a head start on this project, saying, you know, maybe it's one piece of your project, which is also going to be
like almost doing a Kickstarter for the seed money for a project
kind of thing.
I haven't seen any examples like that, but I've been, since I'm interested in an artist book at this point, mm-hmm. I've been mostly keeping an eye on all of those projects, right. And monitoring, mm-hmm. what makes the ones that work and which ones fail, and trying to get a sense of why, so I can be prepared to do my own marketing. Uh-huh. Right.
So, just some information you may want to know about Kickstarter. You own 100% of your project. Kickstarter gets nothing for it. It's just yours 100%. It's only used for creative projects. It's not used for charity projects or causes of any kind. Now, there are some other organizations that are a little bit more flexible, such as, what's that one, Agogo? What's that one? Indiegogo. Now, they'll fund any project. They have no criteria. That's what I'm learning. And I think they're the largest, they call this crowdfunding. and they're the largest crowdfunding entity out there right now. They have 30,000 campaigns in 200 countries. There are a couple of other organizations called Rocket Hub, and there's one in Europe called Fans Next Door, and here's one for Sell a Band. It helps musicians source money for recording, touring, and promotion. On that note, why don't you read the email? And I think I've had found the answer to that email.
All right, here we go. I'm a high school band director, and I'm interested in using Kickstarter to help fund a project that would involve the school band. We've been invited to perform at a music festival in Argentina. Could I use Kickstarter to help me fund this?
Now, according to what I'm reading today, I think Sell a Band might work for this.
Would work better than Kickstarter.
Well, I don't know. Do you think Kickstarter would fund a trip down to Argentina for a school band? I guess he could.
From what you're saying, it sounds like that might or might not. That starts falling into the realm of causes.
I don't know. That's like you said, it's like a non-for-profit generating funding. It's not an actual.
Well, you know, I don't know if that's a cause. I don't know if it's a creative project. You know, maybe if he tied it into giving, recording a CD down there with some other bands, I'm not sure. But I think that's worth looking into.
Well, that other Sell a Band would sound
well,
like
I
a
also,
better fit.
When I was doing my research, there are people out there who poo-poo Kickstarter. They say it's a scam. They say most of the people that give you the money are your friends and your family anyway. So why don't you just go onto your Facebook page or go onto your email list and send out an email to all your friends and family and see if they'll promote.
Is that actually true?
Well, I mean, it's somebody's take on this. I mean, I think there are both. It works both ways. Some people don't get any money besides their friends and family.
Uh-huh.
And then there's been some success stories. So I think it'd go either way.
And I think the other thing that's starting to happen too that I've gotten a sense of from a lot of my friends who are artists who've considered this or who are just getting a lot of emails about other people's Kickstarters, as much as they love everybody in their network, there's starting to be, I think, a little bit of market saturation. If you say this is only from 2009, it's like it's only 2 years old, and already some people are sort of getting some Kickstarter fatigue. It's interesting to see how quickly that's coming in.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the school fundraisers, you know, Girl Scout cookies everywhere.
Yes. Is there overlap? Like, do your friends... Are you worried your other friends on Kickstarter are going to steal your friends who are like funding you or like things like that? Is that like an issue or?
I don't know if I'm necessarily worried about that. There's a lot of tight networking within the arts. I mean, mm-hmm. We got to do it to survive, and we find that sometimes if you're showing at a nonprofit, you're also donating artwork for benefits for that nonprofit, and you may even be buying a small work of art for over your couch, even as an artist, with mm-hmm. what limited money you have
right.
from one of those benefit events,
right.
just to sort of like. Let the space know that you believe in them,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and
support them. Mm-hmm. Now, Jim, when you sent me your information regarding some of the projects you worked on, I found it very interesting, your War Bonds project, how it fit into the Kickstarter. I'd like you to share with the audience what that War Bonds project, how it sounded like Kickstarter. Tell them the story on that one, please.
Well, this dates all the way back to ancient times of 2003 or so.
Back in the Bush days.
Right, exactly. And if you remember, that was about the time that we were all gearing up to head off to Iraq.
Oh, yes.
And we were already in Afghanistan.
We're mm-hmm. still there.
Anyways, just coincidentally, I had been working on a bunch of projects that were moving, getting larger and larger, and I was looking at doing this project with some toy soldiers, and I realized I need 100,000 of these toy soldiers that are 4 inches tall with mouse ears on them. And because they're stupid little objects on their own, but when you get a whole bunch of them together and you start having them do different things, like if you have a grid, say 10 foot by 10 foot of all of them pointing in one direction versus them split down the middle pointing at each other, totally different instant narrative. Yeah. So if I wanted to get a whole bunch of this, a carpet of all these grids of 10 foot by 10 foot, different formations, letting people know, like just experience the piece and go, oh, look, there's all these narratives here and they're just coming out very quickly and fluidly. But in order to raise the funds for that, when I started researching it, pretty hefty price tag, about $40,000, which, if you're keeping track, that's somewhere around the price of a BMW.
Mm-hmm.
And most artists don't have that. I was in grad school, actually, at the time.
Uh-huh.
And so I'd also been getting interested not only in multiples, but this was flowing into ideas about collectivity, the economy, how we're a part of society. We're an agent within a larger, almost like an organism, you know, the whole human organism.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, wow, is there a way to actually turn this into an artwork and track this a little bit? And if anything, if I'm raising an army, shouldn't I sell some war bonds to raise my army? And that sort of gave birth to the War Bonds project, which has had a bunch of bumps along the way, but basically created these beautiful certificate prints that play with a lot of like sort of the security printing features that you see like on currency and right. municipal bonds and mm-hmm. what, but in ways that are like really artistic. In fact, the print houses that we talked to were very excited about the project initially.
Right.
And what happened next?
And then a state's attorney general caught wind of it and sort of got us shut down from doing it in the U.S. But through some very careful legal footwork and having a very clear disclaimer on the certificate, letting people know this is just an artwork. This is not any sort of securities certificate that you can turn in even for a single toy soldier at any point.
Right.
It was deemed to be actually an airtight art action, and it's just an artwork as opposed to some guy who's running a boiler room scam.
And producing forgeries.
And the funny thing is they actually have a toy soldier on them. I haven't ever seen a piece of currency or a municipal bond or anything like that with a toy soldier on it.
Yeah. Or maybe some random country in Africa might have such
a
graphic there.
I think we're okay there.
So your idea of these issuing these bonds was very similar to what the Kickstarter program does. You know, send me some money and I'm going to produce this artwork and you're going to get something. And originally you were going to give them something back.
Originally I was going to give them something back, but then basically it had to be, nope, you just own this fine art certificate. You can frame it and put it over your desk right. and enjoy it.
So that's a very interesting concept. And lo and behold, 5 years later, somebody else actually put it on the web and made a social medium, I guess, to use the same concept to get the money from people to produce this art. Mm-hmm. So how's the War Bonds project doing?
It's still going. I've sold actually probably only about 300 or so of these things out of an edition of over 2,000 to raise the monies necessary. But the thing is they sort of just sat there for a while. And then about 3.5 years later, I said, you know, I need something that actually can create an event around this. And went further into turning it into an artwork. And we developed something called the War Bonds Performance, which right. basically is sort of like this Patton-esque sort of theater of the absurd drill sergeant persona that marches back and forth for just over 15 minutes talking about collectivity, the economy, what it means to be an individual within a larger society, and where big things come from, how they're funded.
Mm-hmm. So you have a show coming up. Tell us about that, please.
I've actually got two shows coming up. The first one is all the works that are going to be going into this monograph that we were talking about earlier going to be at Open Source Gallery, which is in South Slope, Brooklyn, at 6th and 17th Street and 6th Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And that is opening on September 10th. The opening reception is from 7 to 10. Put it on your calendar. Coming out. Okay. It's open to the public. And then also at Dumbo Art Center, the War Bonds performance is actually going to be being revived for their program this year.
And are you the star of the show?
Yes, I am. It's a one-man act.
Okay.
And that's October 19th at 7 p.m.
Is that during the arts festival down there, or is it just a specific event?
Is it during the arts
festival? I don't know. It's actually,
I think the arts festival is the end of September.
It's part of a show that's going to be in the gallery, though.
Now, tell me the name of the show. The general show. What's something about economics?
The whole program this year at Dumbo Art Center is about economics, but the actual show there, it's kind of a mouthful. Let's see. I might need to look at my notes here. It's called Gladly Will I Sell for Profit, Dear Merchants of the Town, My Hat Laden with Snow. And it's by Aaron Bergman and Alejandra Salinas. And these are both a couple of artists from Oslo, Norway, doing their first solo show in New York.
Cool.
Now, what I read somewhere was that the show had something to do with how to have economics and artwork or creatives or something. Tell me something.
The entire program this year, they've had, I think they're doing five different shows, gallery shows, that are all about different economic things. The last one was about the information economy.
Right.
And this next one is sort of about the market economy, but they've been sort of hitting different notions, like very, very sort of high level, highbrow philosophical approaches on economics.
Now, the reason why I keep asking about that, we have one more minute. I read that and I thought that maybe they should have Flash Talks Cash taped during the whole gallery show. We're talking about economics and finances.
I'll talk to Carl and see what he can do.
It's a piece of art, isn't it? Maybe we could get a little gallery showing on art.
I call you a piece of work. I don't know about a piece of art.
A piece of art. This is
definitely, you are giving yourself way too much credit on
work
that one.
Work of art here.
Way too much credit.
So you got to have two shows coming up. You're thinking seriously about going on Kickstarter. Is that right,
Chuck? That is correct.
Are you not actually on Kickstarter yet?
No.
Yet.
Okay.
But he's thinking seriously about going on Kickstarter. So everybody has to just tune in to Jim Leonard and his upcoming events. Two gallery shows, September 10th, October 17th. You go to his website. What's your website? Let them get in touch with you.
JamesLeonard.org. That's JamesLeonard.org. And all the upcoming events are listed there.
Oh, good. So I want to thank you, Jim, for coming on. I want to thank you for forcing me to learn more about Kickstarter as a financial person. That's important, especially when I work with all of you creative people. And Andrew learned an awful lot today, didn't he?
I'm still befuddled by the whole concept of just giving people money to do their job. But if there's something beneficial at the end, I can totally understand it. Based on what he's given me, like, it's much more than...
Well, sometimes you get stuff back in return. It's sometimes better than a tote bag.
Oh, really? That's awesome. I still have to look into this.
Okay, we'll be back next week with a new show. I want to thank you all for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye.
You are about to hear a live
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. There's a lot of posturing and talking around raw milk these days and how great it is. But if you really want to get a full-on investigation into the pros and cons, the risks and benefits of raw milk consumption, here's a nifty website, www.realrawmilkfacts.com. It has a laundry list of FAQs, along with information from studies and reports from American and European science communities. If you flirt with raw milk consumption, this is definitely worth taking a look at. This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Every spring at the end of kidding season, goat dairies across the country are faced with the question of what to do with their male bucklings. Because on a dairy farm, there's no role for a male. Often the most economical thing for these farmers to do is to cull the animals at birth or ship them off to the commodity market. Heritage Foods USA is embarking on a new project, No Goat Left Behind, looking to step in and fill this niche by creating a marketplace for these male bucklings. Visit us at www.heritagefoodsusa.com to learn more and to reserve your goat this coming October.